This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. We need some energy here. So let's try that again. Good afternoon. Hey, there we go. So I was sitting here reflecting on whether it was me or it was FB that came up with this pretentious title, Effective Strategic Planning and Budgeting Processes. I think it was suggested, but so I'd like to rename it just now, and let's call it Strategic Planning Made Simple. So my hope is that the time we spend this afternoon will be a time where we learn that while strategic planning sounds like this very complex process that only the professionals and the ones with the IQ for this can actually get it done, and that the rest of us just need to be satisfied with blundering along and stumbling and bumbling, that it's actually not that complicated. Okay, so strategic planning made simple. I'll ask several questions right here at the outset. So do not put up your hand unless you wish to disclose. I'm curious how many, actually first let me preface this by asking, I'm just curious, are you here for strategic planning in relation to missions and budgeting? Or is it in relation to business and budgeting? Or is it a mixture of everything? How about like for business? Okay. How about for missions? Okay. So a mixture. Okay.
I'm here for both.
For both. Okay. Yeah, I should have had the third for both. Or for the fourth maybe for none of the above. Maybe it was obligatory, you know, or mandatory, had to be here. Here's the question that you don't have to put up your hand if you don't wish. Are there people here that are making written annual plans? Not a budget, you know, with the charts with the numbers, but written annual plans that are narratives of what you are working to accomplish. Okay. And maybe for most of us, we'll say that it's not that we're just flying blind. We're doing it. We're not committing it to paper. We're doing it in our heads. And that has its benefits and it has its downsides, and we'll discuss that as we go through this. By the way, let me say at this point, feel free to interrupt at any time. Okay, instead, there's a slide at the end that says questions and comments and discussion, but let's do that throughout. It's a small group. We can interact with each other. Just make sure that if you make a comment or you ask a question, speak loudly and plainly, and I will try to repeat the question for the recording. But if you are just operating out of what you know in your head, and essentially just repeating this year what you did last year, and you'll probably repeat it again next year, then that is also planning. It may not be strategic, but it is planning to a degree. And you might think, well, our planning really is to keep doing things the way we've always done them. But I want to make the point this afternoon that keeping doing things the way you've always done them is actually not as simple as you might think. and how that the current environment and the changes that take place tend to take us off course, and you end up, when you just follow, just repeat what you've always done year after year, a decade later, you might look back and say, well, we never started out to get to here. But this is the whole idea of being more strategic in our thinking and our planning. So, an overview. Why is strategic planning important? What is strategic planning? And how is strategic planning done? We're basically going to talk about strategic planning in these three categories. Why is it important? What is strategic planning? And then how is it done? So why is strategic planning important? There is a truism. Left to ourselves, we naturally follow the path of least resistance. Now, just in case some of you have been doing reading on this and you're mentally already rebutting this idea and say, actually, there's a better way to look at this. There are geologists who have studied the course, actually, it was the course of the Snake River in the Pacific Northwest. And they concluded that while we say water follows the path of least resistance, it is actually shaped by the hardest resistance, and that the banks with the hardest rock are what actually shape the direction the water flows rather than that which gives way. So it's a different way of looking at the same truth, but maybe more germane to what we're discussing here, in that we want to establish the hard points that will shape the path of our business or mission or whatever our enterprise is. Because it is the values, our mission, our vision, that should be the hard points that shape the course that that the waters flow into, the waters of our planning flows into. Now, I'd like to pause here just a second and say that there are those who say, who push back on this whole idea of strategic planning, in particular, if you're engaged in the work of God's kingdom, you know, in some aspect of some, you know, a mission program or other, you know, work in the kingdom, there are those who say, just have faith. Just have faith and allow God to shape things. So that certainly is a point to consider, because, you know, God does shape things, but there are different places in the Scripture where we also learn about being more strategic. The text. So there are several verses I would like to cite as kind of like a biblical basis for thinking ahead and planning ahead. And you already know most of these verses, but I'll just mention them again. The one is James 4:13, which is a warning. Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is a vapor that appears for a little time, then vanishes away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we will live and do this or that. So let's consider that as one of the parameters within which we do our strategic planning, according to God's will. Then there's also the intentionality of future planning. Luke 14:28-32, for which of you intending to build a tower sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to build it? Lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king going to war against another king sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he may be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is yet a great way off, he sendeth an ambassage and desireth conditions of peace. So think ahead. And then I'm going to throw out an additional one that suggests that the enemy of our souls and the enemy of the work of God's kingdom is very strategic. There's a passage in 1 Timothy 3, verse 17, which is in that list of qualifications for ministry, for bishops and elders. And it says that we should pray for one, and he needs this man needs to be of a certain nature, because I think it's in the passage and in the context that he must have a good reputation from without the outside of the church, because he will fall into a trap, or else he will fall into a trap. So if you think about setting a trap is premeditated. And as I think about my own life, you know, I fall into enough unintended trouble just bumbling along through life, you know, not thinking, not planning ahead, just this happens and that happens, and I stumble along and fall, let alone there being traps laid in a premeditated way by our enemy to cause us to stumble. And so the enemy of our souls is doing strategic planning. Okay, so maybe this will be a call for us to be more strategic in how we plan our spiritual lives and as well as our businesses and missions. All right. I want to draw your attention to this book. I had mentioned earlier that just continuing to do year after year what you've done the prior year may actually over time lead you way off course. And so this book it's called Mission Drift. It's by Peter Greer and Chris Horst. Now there's a sense in which it's kind of it talks about organizations much bigger than we concern ourselves with, and so we may read it and say, "Well, that doesn't really apply to us." I would suggest that it in just scale it to match your circumstances, and the same principles apply. Where there is a truism that there are in your business, in your product offering, in your ministry, in the needs that you address, there is an ever-expanding circle, and that there will always be other opportunities, let's quote opportunities, that come along and manifest themselves. And somebody should do something about this. And because we are people of God with hearts for those that have needs, we are kind of like predisposed to address those needs. And this can be good. I would say, for example, any ministry in Eastern Europe right now is rethinking and retooling and adjusting to meet the needs of the refugee crisis and the crisis in the church. You're pulling together church members, you know, when your congregation disintegrates and everyone flees, and some are in Poland and some are in Romania and some are in Moldavia and maybe some are in Russia and some are still in Ukraine. So that presents whole new challenges. And so it's incumbent that we be flexible enough to adjust to meet those needs. But that's on the one hand. On the other hand, there are situations where we can easily begin doing what another ministry already is organized to do, and somehow we kind of drift over here and we begin being redundant, and because it's local to us or for whatever reason, we kind of like drift over and we drift off course. And so what happens is over time we just kind of like lose our strategic purpose. And so good read. Mission drift is the slow and insidious shift away from the original vision, a mission, purpose, and identity of an organization. So that there's I'll just mention this. In this book, there's on page 58 and 59, there's a very interesting account of the Quaker Oats Company Trust, which is close to it's of interest to me and close to my heart because Akron, Ohio, where the Quaker Oats Company was headquartered, is like our local city. And the owner of the Quaker Oat Company built it into a financial powerhouse. He was a committed believer, and he established a trust. That trust today yet is a functioning trust. And he put into place, but because he understood the nature of men and the nature of mission creep or mission drift, he put into place some parameters so that after his death, long after his death, when the men that come together to make disbursements from his trust, so that they still make disbursements in alignment with the original purpose for which the trust was established. And so here's what they do. First, they begin in prayer. Next, they read aloud the mission and vision Henry Crowell himself wrote. They read his words and meditate on the vision God gave him before starting official foundation business. From the outside looking in, the tradition seems almost comical. A group of high-powered executive leaders sitting for 3 hours while reading aloud one to another. But it is a practice demonstrating a defining characteristic of mission-true organizations. They proactively protect their mission, understanding that every organization is susceptible to drift. And then it contrasts with a man named Howard Pugh. Howard Pugh was an industrialist that when Billy Graham had the vision to start Christianity Today. So this is not an endorsement of that magazine, but it's a story about its founding. Howard Pugh established a foundation, and he basically funded the founding of Christianity Today. Without the parameters to maintain their vision and their mission, the Pew Foundation today would not dream of making a distribution to Christianity Today because it's far too conservative to reflect the values of those that are making these choices. So I'm saying this to say, think in terms of your own business, your own mission, but also think in terms of the how do you maintain the vision in successive generations. Read that book. So why is strategic planning important? Once financial and human resources are established, organizations over time tend to simply repeat annual plans. They tend to stagnate without considering if programs are taking it where planned. They tend to change based on felt needs and wander off course. So, strategic planning helps an organization plan ahead. Keep a multiple year focus when making annual plans. It helps an organization to stay on mission and overcome the pressures to wander off course. It helps to address changing needs in long-term sustainable ways, that is, in alignment with their vision, mission, and values, and to maintain a balance between continuing continuing established activities and taking advantage of new opportunities. That's why I tried to say about the missions in Eastern Europe right now. You do want to keep a balance there. If the Lord opens a door, if there is a great need, respond to that need. So, what is strategic planning? I'm going to move on to the next section. What is strategic planning? Unless anyone has any comments, let me just pause here and say. So, I've tried to lay on you that to think strategically is actually of importance. Okay, so, what is it? Strategic planning is simply multi-year planning based on the organization's vision, mission, and values. Most organizations already make detailed annual plans or at least budgets. Strategic planning is simply looking ahead over multiple years and making less detailed long-term plans. A long-term strategic plan informs the annual plan and keeps them in alignment with the overall strategy. Now, I work for Anabaptist Financial, and at AF, we have for a long time talked about our strategic plans. Our strategic plans are essentially annual plans. So are annual plans strategic? Let's define strategic. Strategic is like having a strategy, looking ahead, looking at the overall picture.
Yes.
So a strategic plan, an annual plan, can be strategic, but it's a limited look. The Greek word stratego actually means, now I'm assuming that this is not a, I'm sure if you will Google the etymology of strategy, you might find other nuances, but here's a big idea. The Greek word stratego means the general's view of the battlefield. It suggests that to be strategic is to be comprehensive, to cover the landscape, and to span the entire organization. So strategy is often used as a military context, in a military context relating to long-term overall aims and interests, and it deals with length and breadth and the means of achieving them. So this next slide asks a question to those of you that go to Sarasota, Florida. I'm assuming that there are some in this crowd that do. You maybe have heard of the Libazoners. In Myakka City, about 30 miles east of Sarasota, there is a horse farm, and they raise Libazoners, or Libazon, the Libazon breed. It's a breed of horses that dates back to the Middle Ages. And they are continuing to train these horses in these maneuvers that are called airs above the ground. So if you look at it, you can see how that the horse is leaping. Or look at the one that is rearing back. His feet are actually off the ground. So what's this all about? These horses were trained for use by generals in medieval battles, where there would be a need, because a battle is actually a number of smaller battles going on within a bigger one. And so there's a need for the one who is responsible for the overall direction to shore up the weak parts where things are going badly, and to push the advantage where things are going well, and to like coordinate the overall battle that's going on. So how do you get a view of the battlefield if you can't be on a hill overlooking it, and then you're too far away, at least in medieval times, to effectively give direction, give orders? So these horses would provide at least a short glimpse of the overall battlefield by leaping into the air. It somehow captures that idea of being strategic, being able to look at, to see the overall picture. So what is strategic planning? Well, here's one. One graphic that just shows the difference between what I'll call long-term strategy, the annual strategic plan, and the action plan. Here's another slide that gives the same, gives more definition to the same concept. So at the top is the 3 to 5 year focus. So look at the red arrow pointing down. That is the long-term strategy. What is your focus 3 to 5 years ahead? Research, collaborate, and seek to establish a united vision. And then that gets reduced into an annual plan, an annual focus. Plan each year, but in harmony with the three to five-year plan. And then another aspect that we won't deal with much today is the action plan, which is kind of like within your annual plan. It's depending on how frequently you meet as a staff or whether it's a board. If you have quarterly meetings, that's like reduce things to who's going to do what within the next quarter to advance the annual plan. So it's not just random or intuitive work. Collaboration is needed, and there needs to be a unity of vision. So what I'd like to get to now is how, and spend the rest of our time thinking about, well, how is it done? Because this is where we often stall, okay? We understand that we should look 3 to 5 years ahead. We understand that the annual plan should be in alignment with this plan, and that if we don't do this, we're liable to kind of like get off course. But how do you actually do this? I'm going to start by saying commit it to paper. Now, this also allows for digital commitment to paper, but write it down. And there's reasons for this. One of them is that a strategic plan should involve all the stakeholders. So, well, who are the stakeholders? Well, in your business, it could be shareholders, in your or owners, or key employees, or in a mission, it would be the board members, the key staff, and so on, but involve others. And here's the point, that as long as your 3 to 5 year strategic plan is in your head and it's not written out on paper, it's actually vague enough that there's a fairly broad tolerance for disunity or for lack of unity. One man can be thinking one thing, somebody else thinks something different, but as long as you don't reduce it to paper and write it out, that doesn't become apparent. Or you may even know it, but because you don't write it out, you can kind of like overlook it. And so you wait and wait and wait until sometime that divisive view, or those differing viewpoints, are in an annual plan and they're out in the field, and now there's a lack of unity on what we are wanting to do. It's helpful to write it down early on. It forces you to deal with the disunity that there may exist. So, but how to get started?
Yes. Be a time of the year when you set that with your group, or
So the question is there a magic time of year to do this? The answer is not necessarily for the strategic plan, but the annual plan should coincide with your fiscal period. So if you are running on a calendar year from January 1 through December 31, then it should be done prior to the start of the new fiscal year. And it generally makes sense to update your strategic plan in alignment with your annual plan. So it's kind of all done at the same time. Though my experience, and this will vary from business to business, mission to mission, but it's generally the strategic plan takes more time than just like hammering out the details of the annual, because often an annual plan is we did this much last year and we're going to do the same thing this year, but we'll need to adjust for higher costs, or we'll need to adjust for growth, and it'll take two more people, and we'll need one new truck, and maybe if you're in ministry, we'll need to build a school building and bring a teacher in. And so you just adjust for those things. When you think ahead and say, our overall mission here, let's say, stay with the mission model here, is to make a difference in this community. And in this community, part of that is providing schooling to increase the level of education. But along with that, there's also the need to help the local business owners generate sufficient income that they can support the school, and that their children can pay the tuition. So, how do you do that? Well, there needs to be some kind of either a finance program or a way to encourage local agriculture, and so. In your strategic plan, you are looking at not just starting a school, but looking at all these different aspects and understanding that this needs to be done in concert with each other.
I've heard it said that people can't achieve everything that they have planned in 1 year, but can achieve more in 5 years than what they anticipate.
Okay. The comment is that a mission, well, you're speaking of a mission or a business,
yeah,
or a mission or business can't achieve as much in 1 year as you plan, but more in 5 years than you anticipate.
Right.
So I'll open that up to you. What are you thinking? What are your thoughts? Do you have more that you'd want to say on that?
I'm thinking with an annual plan, you can put a lot into that, and it might be too much for 1 year. And you were saying the strategic plan mm-hmm. should take longer because, you know, potentially there's 3 or 5 years
mm-hmm.
of items there. And I was just curious.
Yeah. Well, if you're setting out to write a strategic plan for the first time, I think it will take more time, and it'll take more time than you generally allocate to making your annual plan and budget, because it's forcing you to think ahead. You should think about your vision, your mission, what you want to accomplish, and there's some of these intangible things that are, at least for most of us, heavy lifting. And sometimes you get to a point where you say, see, our vision or our mission, what is our company mission? Oh, we need to, or if we have one, it needs to be updated, or we need to rethink this. And so that can take much more work. But once it's in place, then it also kind of like falls into the same updating process. But the initial thinking the plan through and reducing it to writing is much heavier lifting. So let's talk about the history, mission, vision, mission, and core values. So when you sit down to begin your annual plan, don't start in the vacuum. You are what you are, so at least think about your history. Okay, you've what is it that brought you here? Take that into account. And then the vision is why we exist as an organization. Now, I hear some fluidity in the way that people talk about vision and mission, because sometimes there seems to be some overlap here. But I would define it this way. The vision is why we exist as an organization. The mission is what we do to fulfill our vision. And the core values are how we act to carry out our mission to fulfill our vision. And I'll just add this, that think about this as the framework within which to think about your business or your mission or your church. What is your vision? The vision is what you see yourself being or doing. And you'll probably never get to the point where you say, we have accomplished our vision. It's not that nature. The mission is that, well, so what do we do so that we accomplish our vision? And the core values are how we do it. Now, I will say this in relation to core values, that when I was working with a church that was establishing their core values, and we ended up with, it was our church, and we ended up with 9. And then we had a strategic thinker. We got the best business strategic thinker in the community and had him sit with us as brothers and say, let's think through our mission, our vision, our mission, and our core values. And he said, when you have 9 of them, they're not core. And so we reduced them to core values. Okay, so this next slide just shows the develop an annual strategy. So now we're focusing on the annual plan. I mentioned here a SWOT analysis. Is anyone doing SWOT analyses? I'm going to suggest to FB, maybe this goes in on the recording here, that it would be helpful to have a breakout session on how to do a SWOT analysis, because there is actually real power in a good SWOT analysis. A SWOT analysis helps us to think through what are our strengths and weaknesses. The strengths and weaknesses are internal, and they're what we are presently. And it looks at what are the opportunities and the threats, which are external and our future. So it's a good context within which to overcome what we already know about ourselves that ain't so, and challenge those assumptions. It never ceases to amaze me how that at Anabaptist Financial, when we do a SWOT analysis, we think everyone already knows about AF. And then I meet someone that says, now what is that? Never heard of AF. Or we have an event and we say, who's here for the first time? And more than, and like, or like half the people are there for the first time. So, okay, we have this innate assumption that people know more than, we think people know more than they actually do know. And what I'm trying to say is we self-inflate our own importance, and we should be more attuned to how that others are, that for many others, we're just part of the landscape. And so we do need to continue to focus on the opportunities that are out there, and especially if, well, this is true for your business, but it's also true for God's work, that we advance the kingdom by creating awareness. Okay.
Paul?
Yes.
Could there be an imbalance of that, of projecting too much?
Obviously there can. Do you have something more specific in mind? The question is, could there be an imbalance?
Sometimes I'm blamed for just projecting and excitement and not staying mm-hmm. with the reality. Mm-hmm.
Any comments or responses?
I'm involved in advertising and
okay.
gung-ho about letting people know. And some of the teams are, well, they know already. Not everybody knows already.
Thank you. Many people forget.
Go ahead.
Document annual plans. We've already talked about writing them down. And part of the annual plan is the budget. That's the numbers. Here's where we just make a cursory acknowledgement that part of your annual plan is your budget. Okay, now just mentioning action plans that it's helpful to plan, have a quarterly action plan. Some are weekly, some are, you can even reduce it to daily to-dos. Just don't reduce it to the point where you are so busy executing your plan that there's no time to actually get any work done.
Okay.
So, but you get the idea. That was kind of an overstatement just to make the point. So, get started by committing it to paper. So if you are saying strategic planning is this very complex, you know, exercise that I need some specialized training for, actually just take a piece of paper and start writing what are, you know, like in the next 5 years, what is our company's purpose, our vision. What are we planning for in the next 5 years? And think about, or if it's a mission, think about what we're wanting to accomplish. What are the bigger ideas? We want to bring about change in this community, in this needy community, where the water sources are creating a diseased population. So that actually takes more than just coming in once and drilling a water well. There needs to be more, like more thought given into a longer term plan. So start just writing some of these of the big ideas and. Start with ideas, not numbers. And then put the numbers to the ideas. And then at the end, let me just say, don't sweat the details. So are there questions? Are there comments? Are there rebuttals? Or other discussion? Yes?
How do you approach team members and say, why do we need this five-year plan? Our five-year plan is to do exactly what we're doing today.
Well, let me open that up to heads that are wiser than mine. Any comments?
I suggest that the way you confront that is more important than the message you get.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell if you have a hearty bum or not. My father taught me there's a way to say no.
I would venture to say there is some truth to that. That our five-year plan is to keep doing the same thing that we are mm-hmm. doing today. But within that, you're going to want to make improvements, efficiencies. So a five-year plan doesn't have to always have continual growth. But there needs to be, you know, the marketplace mm-hmm. is changing. There's technology is changing. So you got to keep that all in focus. Mm-hmm. And you're bringing on another generation. Is the new generation that's coming on interested in continuing with this organization the way it's structured right now? Mm-hmm. You're going to want to make some changes. And so I would venture to say there's no such thing as doing things exactly the way we do it today in 5 years from now. There will be a change of some kind. So can you anticipate that change? And it might not take much at all. You might be able to put it into one sentence mm-hmm. as to what that change is going to be, but there will be change. I appreciate what you shared with the hard work that goes into this. There really is, but at the same time, it can be made simple. And there's another book that comes to my mind is The Five Most Important Questions You Will Ever Ask Any Organization mm-hmm. by Peter Drucker.
There's a suggestion for a book, The Five Most Important Questions You Will Ever Ask
Any Organization
by Peter Drucker.
Yeah, that just makes it so simple.
By the way, there's also a difference between a mature organization and a young organization that's growing. So a mature organization is more settled, and actually needs to. But to your point, there's a so if you're running or managing a nonprofit ministry that's dependent upon volunteers, think ahead to what are the changes and shifts that are taking place within our churches in relation to people volunteering their time. I don't mean this in a negative sense. The millennials and the Generation Xers in the digital generation that are populating our pews are not thinking exactly, not following the pattern of the baby boomers that preceded them. And so give thought to how to bring in the quality of volunteers upon which your ministry is dependent. For example, so thank you for your attendance here today. I trust that this will, if nothing else, have at least spurred us to say, I can do this. Just start. Yes.
I really like what you asked us. Hope we can explore that more of how you handle team members that say, no, put it up, no more knowledge needed, boom.
Yeah, that is a great question, but I will transition to the moderator.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.